Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.
Hello, and welcome to Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. The classic Southern Gothic tale usually includes a powerful and wealthy family that appears to have it all on the surface, but as the tale unfolds, darkness and lies and oh so many secrets lie just beneath the shiny surface. Money, power, greed, and secrets. Those things are at the core of many true crime cases that we all study and discuss and enjoy learning about. Right now, there is a real-life Southern Gothic tale, a true crime story with all of those elements unfolding as we watch in real time. The legacy of money, power, greed, and secrets goes back decades, but it appears it is coming to a very abrupt ending right before our eyes. This is the case of the Murdaugh Family Mysteries. Let's get into it. We all watch movies and hear stories about powerful Southern families that seem to lead charmed lives. They become dynasties over time, with each generation following the last into a life of wealth and luxury. One powerful man hands power to his son, and soon the family owns an empire. At the core of these tales is usually a strong-willed but outwardly kind matriarch who not only raises the next generation to assume the throne, but does it while keeping the family secrets locked tightly away. Everything looks like a fairy tale of Southern gentility from a distance, but often when you get a little closer look, things are far from what they first appeared to be. Almost 90 years ago, the Murdaugh family began building what would become one of these Southern dynasties, their own legal empire. The mysteries and secrets that lie deep within the Murdaugh family history are coming to light despite all of the efforts to keep them hidden forever. We are going to continue to follow this case as it unfolds, so let's call this part one. 1910 to 2006. In 1910, Randolph Murdaugh Sr. graduated from USC's law school and founded a law firm in Hampton, South Carolina, which is about 65 miles from Charleston. In 1920, he became solicitor in the 14th Judicial Circuit. Solicitor is the same thing as district attorney. So if you're unfamiliar with the term solicitor, just think district attorney when you hear it. Not only was Randolph the county solicitor, he also ran the local daily newspaper called the Hampton County Herald. Randolph acted as solicitor from 1920 to 1940 when he was killed when a train hit the car he was in. Upon Randolph's demise, his son, Randolph Buster Murdaugh Jr., became solicitor and served in that position until 1986. Now, apparently, Buster was basically a caricature come to life. He was loud, he had a very big presence, he kept a huge plug of chewing tobacco in his mouth at all times, and he would actually act out the murder scenes he was prosecuting in court. It was said that he could mesmerize a jury. It's funny how regionalized things like that are. Utah judges, where I've spent the majority of my courtroom time, which granted isn't a lot, I would occasionally be in court for certain things as a paralegal, they keep their courtrooms very quiet and decorum is paramount. I've seen a few attorneys in my time start to get a little too theatrical, and for the most part, the judge shuts that down pretty quickly. But there are judges across the country that will allow these kinds of antics in the courtroom, and apparently, if your last name's Murdaugh, you have a lot of leeway in court. It comes as no surprise to hear that Buster was also a rule bender. He was even rebuked several times by the state Supreme Court for the manner in which he conducted his closing arguments in death penalty cases. He was even indicted in 1986 for warning a bootlegger he was friends with that he should move his still into the next county over to avoid the police. But he was actually acquitted of those charges. So it sounds like Buster was quite the character. He retired in 1986 after this brush with the law, and he died in 1998. As soon as Buster was out, his son, Randolph Murdaugh III, was in. He was solicitor until 2006 when he retired. Now, he also just died in June of 2021, which kind of plays into the story a little bit later on. Okay, now, Randolph III, the man who just died in June of 2021 of natural causes, old age, I think he was in his late 80s, he had three sons. The first was Randall IV, who they call Randy, Richard Alexander, called Alex, and John Marvin. Both Randy and Alex joined the family law firm. At the center of this case is Alex, who as a lawyer not only worked at the family firm, but also in the solicitor's office. Alex met and married Margaret Kennedy Brandstetter. She went by Maggie. Maggie was a cute blonde sorority girl at the University of South Carolina in the late 80s when the couple wed. Now, Alex and Maggie had two sons, Richard Alexander Jr., who they called Buster after his grandfather, and Paul Terry, who went by Paul. The family led a charmed life. Maggie quietly raised her boys, splitting time between the family's 1,800-acre property in Islandtown, South Carolina, and their beautiful beach house in Edisto on the coast. Alex, Maggie, and their sons, Buster and Paul, were often seen at the local yacht club. They liked to go swimming in their home's large pools, and they spent a lot of time on the lake boating. Maggie's friends describe her as fun-loving, saying she loved to laugh and make other people laugh. She could often be seen at tailgate parties in the day and black tie affairs at night. The Whale-Heeled family was known throughout the area as a tight-knit unit who enjoyed their friends, their family, and their life. Well, that's how it might have looked on the outside anyway. But as in any good Southern Gothic tale, things were not as they appeared at first glance. Sources close to the family have since described Alex and Maggie's marriage as troubled. I have a feeling that more details are going to come out on this in the future, but there is no question that the marriage had its fair share of issues and then some. According to some people close to the family, those problems began in the mid-2000s, and despite the Murdaugh's attempts to hide them, they grew worse and worse over time. The New York Post recently wrote an article calling the Murdaugh family toxic. The article paints a picture of Maggie, or Mrs. Maggie, as her servants were told to call her, wearing furs all the time, living on one of the family's three large properties, the hunting ranch, a estate in the country, raising these two boys who pretty much got whatever they wanted and did whatever they felt like doing. In this version of the story, the boys like to shoot wild animals just to shoot them. They drive recklessly on the family powerboat and just kind of come off as really spoiled. Now, I have no idea if this portrait of the family is correct, but I do think it's safe to say that this family had a lot of special privilege and that they protected their own at all costs, even if that meant using their decades-long reign of power to do so. There are other accounts of people saying softer things, about Maggie at least. Gabby Thomas, 62, is quoted as saying, "Mrs. Maggie would give you the shirt off her back, that one. Wonderful woman. Them others? I don't know. But she sure spoiled Paul. I heard him talk back to her once so badly in the beauty parlor that I made him apologize." I don't think I'm going out on a limb when I say that is quite easy to picture in your mind. We all know kids who maybe have a little too much and maybe get away with a little too much. Maggie and Alex had big plans for their sons. They were going to go off to expensive and respected universities, they would get their law doctorates, and they would take the seat that had been long prepared for them at the head of the family legal dynasty. But what is the saying about the best laid plans? July 8th, 2015. A young man named Stephen Smith, only 19 years old, is found dead around 4 a.m. in the middle of Sandy Run Road in Hampton County. There are no tire marks or debris that would indicate he had been hit by a car. Investigators notice that his shoes are very loosely tied, almost like they had been put back on his feet by someone other than Stephen. His head was bruised and misshapen by blunt force, and his shoulder was dislocated. Those were the only injuries, but obviously the head trauma was enough to kill him. Stephen's car was found 3 miles away from his body on Bramberg Highway with the gas cap off. Investigators kind of went back and forth between believing Stephen had been killed by a gunshot or had died by a hit and run, but for some reason, they told South Carolina Highway Patrol that it was not a hit and run, and so their officers did not need to be at the autopsy. Now, that's a little strange and suspicious. And after the autopsy, that is not what the pathologist ruled. She ruled that Stephen was, in fact, killed in a hit-and-run crash. Then days later, the county coroner interjects and says he does not agree with Dr. Aaron Presnell's ruling and doesn't believe the death was attributed to hit-and-run. Now, we could do an entire episode on this death alone, but basically it comes out that friends of Buster Murdaugh, one of the sons of Alex and Maggie, they're telling people that Buster Murdaugh killed Stephen. The story goes that Buster and two friends were driving around when they saw Stephen's car. Stephen was outside of the car and Buster ran him down. Then some information comes out about this being a possible hate crime because Stephen was gay. Now, again, none of this has been proven. Those are all rumors and kind of allegations and things that are circling within that area. There are also several suspects besides Buster. But as of now, summer of 2021, Stephen Smith's homicide, and most people are calling it a homicide, remains unsolved. The case has recently been reopened, and of course, we will be following it. February 24th, 2019. A young woman, only 19 years old, named Mallory Beach, goes missing after a boat crash near Paris Island. A 911 call comes into dispatch.
What bridge is this?
911, where's your emergency? Hello? Police, fire, EMS. Hello? Tell everybody to just try it and stay as calm as they can, okay? I know it's hard.
All five of us are on the thing, but we're missing one person.
Right, okay.
Please send someone.
We're calling, okay?
The boat crash was quite serious. And guess who was driving that boat? Paul Murdaugh. Paul had been drinking the night of the crash and was racing through the water at a high rate of speed. Mallory was sitting on her boyfriend's lap as Paul drove the boat into the Archer's Creek Bridge near Paris Island. The collision was so intense that it split the boat wide open, causing a 6-foot gash from the driver's side all the way to the back. The boat actually came completely apart. Paul Murdaugh is later seen on recorded surveillance footage using a fake ID to purchase alcohol at Parker's gas station in Ridgeland, South Carolina. He then continued drinking at Luther's Rare and Well Done in Beaufort. Paul Murdaugh was very, very drunk at the time he crashed the boat. 4 of the 5 teenagers on board were rushed to Beaufort Memorial Hospital. A nurse told the press, quote, "Paul Murdaugh was grossly intoxicated and belligerent. He was the most intoxicated of the group and most uncooperative." Paul's blood alcohol content was 0.286, more than 3 times the legal limit. A search is immediately undertaken for Mallory Beach. Hours go by and then days. A week after the crash, she is found by another boater a few miles away at the Broad River boat landing. The coroner determined she had died from drowning and blunt force trauma. Mallory's family then filed a civil lawsuit against the Murdaugh family, and criminal charges, 3 felony charges to be exact, were brought against Paul for Mallory's death. Now, it took a little time to get the criminal action brought. The Murdaughs are a very powerful family. Paul pled not guilty on May 6, 2019, and the case was set for trial, but was, of course, delayed by the pandemic and by the Murdaughs', you know, great expertise in the legal field. The case was ongoing until just recently, when new and very disturbing developments brought it to an end. June 7, 2021. Alex Murdaugh arrives at the family's 1,800-acre hunting lodge on Moselle Road in Islington, South Carolina. This is the lodge that Maggie and the boys spent most of their time at. When Alex gets there, he discovers a horrific scene. Alex calls 911.
Are they breathing?
No, ma'am. My wife and my son.
And what is your name?
My name is Alex Murdoch. Please hurry. Neither one of them's moving.
The Colleton County Sheriff's Office responds to the scene. Both Maggie and her son Paul are dead. They have been murdered in an execution-style shooting that a responding officer calls a very ugly scene. After a brief investigation, authorities make a statement saying, quote, "The suspect or suspects are not clear, neither is the motive." But then they go on to say, "There is no danger to the public." So that's confusing to me. If there's no suspect, how can they be sure that there's no danger? Information has since been revealed that says Maggie and Paul were shot with two separate weapons. Now, I'm not 100% sure that that has been confirmed or denied by law enforcement, but I read it in multiple credible media outlets. Like I say, this is all happening in real time, so if I give out some wrong information here, it won't surprise me at all. Law enforcement has, however, confirmed that each victim was shot multiple times. Now, if there were two weapons involved, doesn't that most likely mean two shooters? The bodies were found just a few yards apart. According to Murdaugh family representatives, Buster was not present at the time of the shooting. Now, this happened just a couple of months ago, so the investigation is still ongoing. Maggie, just 52 years old, just a year older than I am, and Paul, only 22, were buried in the Hampton Cemetery. That's tragic. Two very young, viable people are just gone, and we don't know why yet. June 17th, 2021. Randy Murdaugh IV and John Marvin Murdaugh, Alex's two brothers, appear in an exclusive interview on ABC News. They claim Paul Murdaugh, their nephew, had been receiving threats and that they think an enemy of the family might have committed the double homicide. That is a very viable theory. They plead with the viewers to come forward with any information they might have on the murders and ask that the public share anything they might know. June 25th, 2021. The Murdaugh family announces that it is offering a $100,000 reward for any information that leads to an arrest in the murders of Maggie and Paul Murdaugh. Just after this announcement, on July 7th, 2021, an attorney representing one of the survivors of the boat crash filed court documents that contain allegations that law enforcement tried to shift the blame for the crash away from Paul Murdaugh onto their client, whose name is Connor Cook. Now, these are very serious allegations. They allege that law enforcement is corrupt and that the Murdaughs have so much power and influence that even law enforcement will lie and cover up for them. It will be very interesting to see how those allegations play out. August 6th, 2021. The South Carolina Attorney General's office drops all charges against Paul Murdaugh in the death of Mallory Beach because Paul, too, is now dead. The investigations continue and authorities, attorneys, judges, and journalists proceed with analyzing and reviewing all of the information in the now four deaths surrounding this family. Wait a second, I added to this script last night. It's actually more than four. We just found out not too long ago. We'll get to that in a second. There is a lot going on with this one. So we've got Stephen Smith in the alleged hit and run. We've got Mallory Beach in the boating collision and the murders of Maggie and Paul at the hunting lodge. And then, like I just said, last night, there was an announcement that there is another death involved in this case. Hang on, we got to get there. September 4th, 2021. Just weeks ago, Alex Murdaugh, Maggie's husband and Paul's father, is changing a tire on the side of a country road in Varnville, Hampton County. A pickup truck driver passes Alex and then circles back. The driver asks him if he's having vehicle trouble. Alex Murdaugh says, without warning, and as he was speaking to the man in the truck, the man pulled out a gun and shot him in the head. That is the story that Alex tells after he called 911, claiming he had been shot by a stranger. Alex Murdaugh is rushed to the hospital and survives the shooting. Now, a couple of days ago, as I was finishing editing this script, I'm sitting at my desk and my phone goes off and there's a Google alert. Right as I was writing this part of the story, we got the announcement that Alex Murdaugh had made up the entire story. I jumped on TV news, which I rarely do, because I wanted to find out what was happening with the arrest. The news was reporting that there had been a man named Curtis Smith arrested in the shooting of Alex Murdaugh. So the night that that information came in, all we knew was that someone had been arrested for shooting Alex. The next morning, we got more information. So Alex Murdaugh has survived this attempt on his life. 2 days after he is shot, he makes an announcement from his hospital bed that he has resigned from his family's law firm and that he has entered rehab because he is battling an opioid addiction. So something was very, very off even before we found out that someone had been arrested in this shooting and that there was more to the story. It was strange right off the bat. He hasn't even left the hospital yet. He's been shot in the head, but survives. How often does that happen? And without even healing, he quits his prestigious job at his nationally known law firm and says he has a drug problem. So everyone was already like, yeah, this doesn't pass the smell test. Now, I also need to mention that it has been revealed that Alex is under state investigation for stealing money from Peters, Murdaugh, Parker, Eltzroth, and Dietrich. Oof, I'm glad I don't have to answer the phone there. So yes, something is very, very wrong here. Now, when I was first writing this script, we didn't know whether or not it was true that Alex had stole this money, but we knew there was an investigation underway. And Alex has since admitted, yes, it's true. He's been stealing money from the firm. September 8th, 2021. After Alex is shot and he resigns from his law firm and says he's entering rehab, the South Carolina Supreme Court suspends Alex Murdaugh's law license effective upon the announcement. He is stripped of all legal practice privileges and has his bar license suspended. A spokesperson who represents Alex doubles down and says Alex's gunshot wound was not self-inflicted and that the gunshot had caused a skull fracture. This same spokesperson states that the gunman was driving a blue pickup truck. September 15th, 2021. Okay, let's return to the information about the arrest of Alex Murdaugh's shooter. Police announced that Curtis Edward Smith, age 61, of Culleton County, has just been charged in the shooting of Alex Murdaugh. Curtis Smith is a client of Alex Murdaugh's. The two men know each other. But in typical Southern Gothic tale tradition, there's a twist. Curtis claims that Alex Murdaugh hired him to shoot him in the head and kill him so that a beneficiary of his, meaning Buster, the only surviving son at this point, could collect a $10 million life insurance policy. It appears that Alex Murdaugh felt as if he had nothing left to live for. He has lost his wife and one of his two sons. And remember, like I said earlier, his father, who he loved and respected, had just died months ago in June, and he was probably still grieving that loss as well. He's also been stripped of his license to practice law. He's been publicly humiliated. He has fallen just about as low as a person can fall. But is there even more? Is it possible that Alex Murdaugh has much, much farther to fall? Is it possible that Alex Murdaugh is a murderer? Yes, of course it's possible. Is that what happened? I don't know. We'll have to wait and find out. Maybe Alex tried to kill himself because he was trying to stop the fall at the midway point and just check out before more information comes out. Maybe he was just grieving. Like I said, we're gonna have to wait. Now, again, we're just finding all of this information out in real time, but I already see some huge problems with this whole story. If Alex hired this man to kill him, why isn't he dead? The guy just pulled up and shot him and then just was like, see ya, and drove off? Wouldn't he stick around to make sure the job was done? And I mean, then I guess Alex decided he'd just call 911 instead of calling the guy back on his cell phone and saying, I'm not dead. You need to come back and shoot me again. I mean, I'm not trying to make light of this, but doesn't that sound a little bit ridiculous? I mean, Alex knows the guy. He's obviously got his cell phone number. He's not dead. So why doesn't he just call the guy and say, come back and shoot me again? That's not what he does. He calls 911. Also, this wasn't just like he happened to survive miraculously this terrible gunshot. The wound was basically a grazing wound. This skull fracture thing turned out to not be as serious as it was made out to be. Grazing, to my understanding, means more of a flesh wound. You know, maybe it goes in and out of, you know, part of the skin area, but it's definitely not like a bullet wound. So, I mean, this shooter not only missed him, but that's bad miss. Even in these early hours of the arrest and the discovery of the claims the shooter is making, there are just things that don't add up to me. September 15th, 2021. Alex Murdaugh's attorney went on the Today Show and stated Alex admits that one, he did steal money from his firm, and two, he did hire Curtis to kill him. He also says some other things. I won't play the entire interview, but I will include a link in the description of this video to the interview if you want to watch it.
And as a result of that, he clearly knew what he had done was wrong and explained to us a couple of things. One, the murder of his son and wife 90 days ago took a tremendous toll on him. His father died of cancer that same week. Most people couldn't get through that. He got through it with the use of opioids. And then last week, a week ago, actually, it was uncovered that he had converted some client and law firm money to his own use and again, spent most of that on opioids. It was an attempt on his part to do something to protect his child. He didn't want law enforcement spending more time on this fake crime instead of focusing on solving the murders of Maggie and Paul.
Okay, so
guys, Alex is doing this for law enforcement. He's only trying to help out law enforcement. His number one concern is law enforcement. Oh, wait, he was going to give them a whole new murder to solve a couple of days ago, but now he is really, really concerned about law enforcement. This is actually a brilliant legal strategy because Alex comes off looking like he's being honest and transparent, which I guess he is in some ways. But what else is happening with these statements by his attorney? The attorney is emphasizing they want to focus on finding the murderer of Maggie and Paul. So without coming out and saying it, Alex is saying, I didn't kill Maggie and Paul. I just want you to find out who did. It's very smart. Now, is it a misdirection? I don't know. I do think we will find out. Curtis Smith, Alex Murdaugh's shooter, has been arrested and has stated he wants a public defender. Now, after all of this happens, and we're to this point with this case where we're like, what else could possibly go on? A story is released notifying the majority of us that didn't know this before that the Murdaugh's housekeeper died in their home back in 2018. This is the additional death that I talked about earlier in the episode. In 2018, a housekeeper named Gloria Satterfield, who had worked for the Murdaugh family for 25 years, died in the Murdaugh home after what was called a trip and fall accident. Now, here's the thing. The death was not reported to the coroner as an accidental death. That's a big problem. No autopsy was performed either. Later on, when the coroner was asked to write a report without an autopsy, the coroner wrote the cause of death was natural and that the injuries sustained were inconsistent with injuries in a trip and fall accident. So as of now, we're getting conflicting information. We're getting information that says she died as the result of an accident. She fell. We don't have any details on it. But then the coroner saying her death was natural. So we're going to have to wait on that one. The housekeeper's family then sues Alex Murdaugh with his assistance. Now, for those of you that might not know this, this is kind of something you don't hear about, you know, publicly all the time in the law. If you carry an insurance policy and you know that you've done something wrong or that you've been negligent or you're responsible for someone getting hurt or killed, you can participate with the representatives of the injured party in a lawsuit against you. That's perfectly legal. Say you own a business and someone falls and gets hurt in your business. You don't have to fight those people that got hurt. You can help them. Basically, you're saying, you know, this is why I carry insurance. This is what I buy insurance for. This is why I cover myself with insurance for these instances. And then you can side with the injured people and help them get a settlement. And that's what Alex did. Now, here's the problem. Since the family won their claim against Alex Murdaugh and the insurance payment was delivered, the family didn't get the money. The family members have sued Alex Murdaugh, claiming they never got their settlement. So he helped them file suit and get a settlement, but then there seems to be allegations that the money went to the law firm and they never got it. Again, this is happening in real time, so I apologize if this turns out to not be completely accurate. And again, everything that I'm saying in this video is just what we know right now. I'm not saying it's a fact. I'm just saying this is what's happening right now. Now, just hours before we went into production, it was announced that a criminal investigation has been opened into Gloria Satterfield's death. So this was initially a civil action, meaning the woman was injured severely and died in Alex's home. Alex joined with the family members, helped them sue his estate. They got a settlement. That's a civil case. That is much different than a criminal investigation and a criminal action. I wish I could give you more information, but this just happened a few hours ago. Today's September 18th, so just a day or so ago, Alex Murdaugh also turned himself into the authorities. He didn't have to be arrested. He went there and turned himself in. He is currently facing charges of insurance fraud, conspiracy to commit insurance fraud, and filing a false police report. He appeared in court where a judge set his bond at $20,000. He was required to surrender his passport and sign a waiver of extradition. The judge then allowed him to return to a rehab center in another state. He will be allowed to continue with rehab, but if he leaves the rehab facility, his bond will be revoked and a warrant will be issued for his arrest. The investigation into the murders of Maggie and Paul are still underway. Could they be related to the death of the housekeeper? Could one person be responsible for all of these mysterious deaths surrounding this one family? I guess we will have to wait. So that, my friends, is where we are going to leave part one, simply because that's all the information we have available right now. It's really going to be interesting to follow this, and I'm excited to hear your feedback and your thoughts on this one. Also, I find that these types of cases are covered much more thoroughly in the regions that they're taking place in. So if you're hearing additional information, maybe you live in the area of this case, you know, I would love to hear from you on that. For now, we are all going to have to wait as the mysteries of the Murdaugh family murders continue to unfold. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. I'm happy that you're here. I appreciate you welcoming me into the true crime community. I'm happy to be here. I'm excited to get to know all of you better. Leave me some feedback. Let me know how you're liking the channel. Let me know what you'd like to see, what you're not loving so much. I value all of your feedback and I appreciate your views. Like the video and subscribe to the channel if you would like to see more of these videos. It really, really helps me a lot. YouTube is a tough place right now. Stay safe and be kind to each other, and I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object. Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.